Yeah, you don't have to go out in the field at all. It's less work. And believe it or not, when I talked with some biologists about using other methods, even the models that we'll talk about, I've received responses that they've indicated that their question has been to me, does that mean that I actually have to go out in the field? And I kind of scratched my head, because how can you evaluate habitat quality if you walk out in the field? And you don't really care, you know, what the quality of your habitat is, then that's fine, that's fair. Okay, use constants. But if you really wanted to monitor, even if this wasn't even tied into regional, state, and regional and national, internet objectives, I mean, even if you're just there as a biologist, wouldn't you be interested in evaluating your management? And yeah, that does require you to kind of go out in the field. You're out there in the field probably doing different things anyways to do management. Why not go out there and evaluate it? And I mean, I think that our goal as researchers is to try to make it so that it is easy to go out in the field, to have a technique that biologists can use and do it efficiently. And I don't think that necessarily has existed so far. And so, for the most part, there really hasn't been another option, quite frankly, at least a very realistic option or feasible option. So, yeah, the advantage is it's easy, and it's obviously inexpensive. You know, if you do have to go out in the field, either yourself or you're sending a technician, it's dollars, you know, ultimately, with respect to personnel time. And depending on what you're doing, there might be some equipment that's involved too. Okay, the disadvantages, what do y'all think? Using a constant, we brought this up last week. It's not representative, very likely, you know, of what's going on. And it may be that, you know, if you have an average wetland, so if you're about mid-successional, you know, the 500 kilograms per hectare is probably going to be pretty close. But if you're early succession or if you're late succession, it certainly isn't going to be. And I mean, you could be overestimating by using 500 kilograms per hectare. You could be overestimating by 2 to 3 times, maybe 4 times days in a moist soil unit. Or on the other side, it could be double that. So by doing good management, duck energy days can be evidence that you're doing good management, and also poor management. But if you're doing your job, it really can help, and heck, it can help in even getting promoted. If you show routinely that you are setting the bar above what is average with respect to your area. So anyways, in other words, so one of them is that obviously these estimates are just a consequence of area. And that's kind of a bummer for, you know, the smaller area. If you're just a smaller area, you're always going to have DEDs. That's probably true always. But on the same platform, every single WMA, everybody has the same production. And that certainly isn't the case. So, as far as habitat quality and management, the other thing all from the Melissa's work and stuff done with the Kaminsky students is that the estimates that are being used currently from the 80s may not be realistic, especially in the Southeast. So we're probably overestimating the duck energy days significantly using those estimates. And, you know, probably most importantly is that just seed and invertebrate resources are not constant. Things are varying all the time in response to management and in response to just environmental stressors, drought, or lots of rain or whatever. Okay, any questions? That is actually smart weed. It will have a pink white flower, pinkish white flower. That's what that is. And that's Lyrcia, red grass. Okay. So the next thing is. Is direct estimation. And well, this is just going out in the field. If you're trying to get seed estimates, you're going out there, you're clipping a plot or a half a plot or whatever of vegetation, taking those seed heads back, inverts if you're out there, you're doing some type of sweep netting. You're going to the lab, you're pulling off all the seed heads, you're threshing all the seed off of those. Inverts, you're sorting in the lab. And then you have a drying oven that you need to dry this stuff. Okay, you usually put them in small little pans, little like tin type pans, and dry them. And then you have to weigh them. So you need a balance, and you weigh them, and you get an estimate of whatever area you had here, meter square or half meter squared, you get an estimate of seed production or invertebrate production per square meter. You know, this is the work that goes into all the content that folks use. That type of stuff. So this is usually done, you know, and you know, most biologists don't have the time to do this or the equipment to do it. So the steps that you would go through to do this is you could go out there and randomly establish sampling spots. You could do it systematically. I might have a picture later of this illustrated, you might remember from last week. But you go out there and you have sample plots within a wetland. You're going out there, you're clipping the vegetation prior to flooding. You inverts, obviously you have to wait until it floods, and then you go out there and sample. And then you thresh the seed, you bring the lab. You thresh your seed from the seed heads, and you sort the inverts from the samples, and you dry and weigh those things, and then you dry and weigh, and then ultimately you have kilograms of seed per hectare. You'll have like grams of seed per square meter, and you can then extrapolate that to kilograms per hectare on average within that wetland. So obviously this is extremely time consuming and consequently monetarily consuming. It's expensive to do this type of stuff. You need specialized equipment to do it, so it's not done very often outside of universities. Any questions about that? Yeah, there are some advantages. Let's go over those. Yeah, that's the advantage right there. You have a good estimate. Yeah, I just dissolved it. I think I actually have the next slide might be. Oh no, it'll be on the next slide. We'll go through those. This is a new device or new technique for trying to get direct estimation of seed resources, and this is one of your handouts. It was one of the former students, and basically what Ed did is he took a leaf blower and I guess reversed the motor or something so that it sucked instead of blew. And so inside the leaf blower he had a sock, and so whatever it was sucked into, it was sucked into the sock, and then he was able to retrieve it. And so what he did is he went out there and he put an X number on a seed, put this thing over top of it, and he sucked it up, and he looked to see, well, how many seeds do we have? And he found that basically they were able to recover 88% of the seed that was down there, and then they used that to come up with a correct factor. If you went out here and the biologist, and you just went and weighed it, you can multiply that to come up seed biomass, and then you can use that ultimately in your DUD calculations. So I don't know of anybody really that's using that, although it's a good idea. The only problem with that is that that's obviously sucking seed just off the ground, and you could have seed that's still up on that. The seed has the inflorescence. So what you would have to do, and I think they may mention this, but it seems like I remember reading this or Minsky telling me this, you go up to an area that if it had some seed heads, you know, that were still had seed on, you would shake those and you would basically let stuff fall to the ground and suck it up. And okay. So the advantages is this is the most accurate estimate. There's no doubt of the three techniques, this is the most accurate out there. You are estimating seed yield. I don't necessarily know about the seed vac. They call it a seed vac, by the way. But I don't know about the seed vac, but if you are actually going out there and cutting seed heads, bringing it back and taking that seed off, or you're out there sampling, so that's the, you know, doesn't get any more accurate than that. So and it's wetland specific. I mean, you know exactly what's in there. Obviously, the disadvantages we talked about: time-consuming, specialized equipment, expensive, and it requires intense field and lab work. So most wetland managers do not have the resources to directly estimate seed and aquatic invertebrate production annually. And if you think about how many inverts you have out there, you know, seed is produced, it falls down there, and for the most part, like moist little seed, it's not decomposing, it's there for the birds. They are expert at picking up that seed, the dabbling ducks especially. They have what are called lamellae on the sides of their bills that act as strainers. And they sift through mud really easily. I mean, they're excellent at picking up this seed. It's right down here. It's called lamellae. And I'm definitely not an artist by any means, but that is a duckbill. And lamellae are, and they're, the extent of lamellae depends on the species, but they're little fine rakes on the bill that help extract seeds and other things, aquatic inverts and stuff, from soil and from water. Most exaggerated is the northern shoveler, really large lamellae to help them in straining. Okay, so if you're doing aquatic invert, aquatic invertebrate production is continuing. You really have to be out there and continue to over time and really get a good estimate of how many inverts are out there. So you know, this just requires a lot of effort and money. So not done by biologists very often. Okay, so food resource using prediction models. Y'all have been exposed to this already. So the whole idea, and I'm just focusing on, we have built some models for predicting aquatic invertebrate biomass, water quality, that actually performed decent. But I'm just going to focus on talking about seed yield. And so the whole idea, again, with these prediction models is you're measuring something on the plant that's strongly correlated with seed yield, and you're predicting seed yield. So you know, something about plant morphology, these are numbers here. Remember some statistics. And you multiply that stuff. I won't make you do this though. This is what it started off as in '92 with Laubon and Fredrickson's first paper. And so they were measuring different parts of the seed head and plant height and all this type of stuff, morphology. And the whole idea was that you could come out there and this would be fast and easy. And I'll tell you what, after doing this, like, this isn't fast or easy. This is a pain in the butt. I can't imagine biologists doing this. And so we already talked about this before. Again, there are all these different variables. And measuring all these different variables on the seed head. And again, the models predicted very well. Are you all familiar with an R-squared value from stats? Do you remember that? So an R-squared value ranges from 0 to 1, where if, let me illustrate it like this. If you can think of explaining variation in something, and if you're using, let's say, plant height to explain seed mass, there is a possibility for you to explain all the variation in seed mass, okay? There, let's say there's 100% of the variation. Every time seed mass increases or decreases, every time plant height increases and decreases, 100% of that variation, okay? And you have a possibility of explaining 100% of that variation in seed mass. The R-squared value is, for a particular variable, how much of that variation are you explaining? So if if you have an R-squared value of, like in this case, the smallest R-squared value of those models was 0.78. That means 78%. The poorest our models explained variation or predicted was 78% of the variation in seed mass. So obviously the larger the R-squared value, the more variation you're explaining, the better the model is. Now, in the biology world, there's so much stuff that goes on in nature that it's often hard to explain things And so it's often considered, if you're explaining at least just half of the variation, like if you have an R-squared value just above 0.5, you're doing good. And so 0.78 is considered pretty darn good in biology. The complaints that were fed back to Fredrickson and us was that the models that we built based on all the different variables here were just too complex. They're based on botanical jargon, infrared and all this type of stuff, pedicels. And it wasn't very attractive to biologists. We also documented that their models didn't predict well. Well, in Missouri, we documented spatial bias in models, and if you want your model to be what's called the most robust model possible, okay, so that you can use it in different areas, so that biologists across the country can use it. So it's clear that using these variables, they just complex and probably across different regions, they're not very good. So all these, you know, when we were sitting back and focusing on or attempting really to kind of get an idea of seed head area. So, you know, we just went back to, you know, something that was simple. A dot grid. Y'all have a copy of our dot grid here, okay? And that is basically about a dot per square meter. And it's a real small dot grid, and y'all will get to use this grid later on. And so you put the seed head on there. easiest way to do this is you just go across row by row and you look to see. And if, I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot to cover these. I mean, these dots are huge, right? But these dots are small. So, I mean, if it's basically touching a dot, you're counting it. Okay. And the procedure in doing this, if you're doing this in the field, is to go out, you collect the seed head, and you bring them back, and you press those so that the pedicels, these are the pedicels, are spread apart, and there aren't any overlapping plant parts. And then just whenever you have an opportunity, count them out in the corner. The R-squared values for these models, I mean, there were 90% of variation in yield was explained just by them. They produce very good. You don't have to measure all these darn things. And so we thought we really were successful, you know. Certainly. Dots, you know, anybody can do. You look at this dot grid, you know, it doesn't take you very long to, you know, realize that that's a lot of dots and that's a pain in the butt. And so I mentioned this last week too, is that other folks have used the dot grid in other regions, in the Northeast and the Southwest, and the models have produced very well. They've continued to predict very well with high R-squared values. So that suggests that seed head area, which we're really calculating here, we're getting an index of that when we're looking at number of dots that's here, is probably a pretty darn good. But again, folks really were reluctant. It's too tedious and too time consuming. And having a time estimate when we did this. So that really spawned the study that Melissa and I did back in a second. So the summary of these two studies is that, at least with the dot studies, there's a really strong positive relationship between the number of dots that are covered and the seed yield. Okay, and so this being our index of area, so as seed head area increases, so does seed yield. That makes very common sense, very simple model. Just by measuring this one simple variable, you could predict seed yield, as opposed to having to measure all these other variables that we were doing, that Fredrickson and Laubon had suggested, and we were doing in that other study. And the models perform better. Again, the R-squared value is 0.92 compared to 0.78. All right, so what are the advantages of estimating with a model? What are some of the advantages? What do you think would be some of the advantages of using a model compared to direct sampling? It's faster, well, easier, yeah, a lot faster. Yeah, you don't need all the equipment. Yeah, all that stuff. Faster, easier. And what else compared to constant? Okay. Those models, 0.92 accuracy and above, you're getting good estimates. And you're out there, you're getting wetland-specific estimates. You're getting real stuff, not constant. So you're still able to get a good feel for what's out there with relatively, you know, there's still some effort involved, but relatively, certainly less effort than direct estimation. Okay. And with the dot model has shown to be reliable outside of in several different regions, but in the other models, this is just kind of a caveat statement here, is that, well, they may only be good in the region they were developed. And I think that's one of the disadvantages that I have here. The main disadvantage is that, at least from biologists, managers, it's just, you know what, there's too much mathematical jargon. A lot of folks, you just say model, and they just shut off, like, you know, Forget that, man. You're just talking gibberish, and I don't want to deal with it. And I appreciate that. And that's why what we're doing now is we're putting together all these models into an Excel spreadsheet, so that all you have to do is plug in the variable, and it predicts duck energy days. That's it. And so that is about as simple as it gets. So now you won't have that luxury, you all as the students. You all will actually go through and count all these and then actually plug them into the equations and get really familiar with the whole process. But do we have data for each specific time? No. Oh, okay. Okay. Right. Yeah. That's a good question. So, the first thing I thought you were asking is, do we have data on all the different plants that are out there? Well, certainly not. There's just a limited number of plants we collected. We need to collect data on more plants. But within a plant, you could have multiple seed heads that come off of it. And so, whenever we collected a plant, in fact, and there's variability. One plant can have a small seed head. One plant can have a large seed head, so the plants that we collected were randomly collected, and we had ones that were small, some that were large, some that had multiple seed heads on them, some just had one. So all of those went into each of our measurements. So it includes that natural variability that you would see in the wetland. Spatial dependency of models. But it seems that seed head area is not spatially dependent. It just makes sense. Larger your seed head, probably the more seed head it is. All right, so that leads into what you all heard last week and us testing the scanning technology. And so last year I ended on like one slide that says future research needs. And now y'all have the results and the opportunity to hear this last week and over again and take notes. So again, it seems that seed head area, it seems logical, it's strongly correlated with seed production based on the DOT study. And so there are a couple different scanners here that we tested. And the portable scanner, my thought was, you know, just take this right out in the field and scan and all this stuff. Well, as it turns out, as you'll see, this is a portable scanner, but you should just use it in the lab, because carrying this piece of equipment out and actually getting a good scan in the field on you really need to press the plant, okay? And it needs to be nice and flat. So you need to, and it's the same way with this, with the desktop. But this is really, you'll get a feeling for it. This is a pain in the butt. This is awesome, and this is probably a little bit easier than counting dots. But I don't think I would be able to sell this, market this very well to biologists. When you look at this thing, you're like, "Oh, that is just cool, man!" And when you scan it, you get a little picture of the seed head, and you're like, "This is the neatest thing ever." But it doesn't work that great, honestly. So this is piece of cake here. That is easy. Dr. Franklin has one of these, and you guys are going to go down and use it. Okay. So it just happened. I didn't know this, but it has the resolution is 1 square millimeter, and it just happened that these dots, before this technology even existed, is at 1 square millimeter too. So they're really, we're talking about the same resolution of these guys and this guy. And we did this for 7 plants, of which I think you have to know all of these. You have to know a different type of plant. Okay. No, you don't have to know this one. Thank you. Epiphlegma. But these are all common plant species. They're in the southeast and especially on Tennessee National Wildlife Refuge where we collected our plants. Okay, so Clayton Farrell, first year, helped. I went over there. We went out and randomly collect these plants. Clayton's a biologist out there and brought them back and pressed them. And then I got busy and brought Melissa on in 2006. And she went out the next year and collected the plants and pressed them and all that stuff. And we collected around 30 plants per year for a total of 6. Good. You have a picture of it here. 9 dots per square. And that's how you can recreate it. We talked about that. Again, this, you know, you do get some real large seed heads and they won't fit on this dot grid, so you have to actually cut the seed head and just, you know, keep tallying your dots. And I'm not sure how big the seed heads are that y'all will be using, but you might have to do that for your seed heads this afternoon. And then, this is the dot grid here, and you can see it here. The way that back when we first published this is just lay a seed head on here, and you track across with your eye on each of these lines, and you get pretty quick with it when you do a bunch of them. And you just count the number of dots that are covered. Jeremy mentioned it today. Morning. Okay, Dr. Gray, why don't you take a transparency and overlay it? Well, you know, I didn't think of going through that whole first study doing it that way. And I just didn't think about it too much. And Melissa, though, that was one of the first things she thought of. And she made a transparency. And you can actually see. Can you see the dots on top of the seed? So this is really a transparency here. She has overlaid. And let me tell you, it does work a heck of a lot easier to do that. And so fast. Okay. So y'all will have a bunch of transparencies to play with today. Yeah.
We touched on this earlier, but I guess my question is, you've got 5 surfaces in a certain area of around, say, most of those plants are going to be watered. So can you flatten?
Yeah.
Are you losing anything when you press it on there? Are you losing any of your surface area, or do you still recreate it because of it?
Well, yeah, the idea is to try to keep these things, even though they may be whorled, when you press you're taking a three-dimensional plane, you're putting it two-dimensional, so we're doing exactly what we need to do, create surface area. Okay, and you want to have it so that your little pedicels here are not overlapping. It becomes a little more complex or a little more challenging, like with, this is called an umbel type inflorescence. This is red root flat sedge, which y'all need to know. But it's really like that. It's got a bunch of seed heads that come out in an umbel shape like that. And so when you flatten them, it's a little more challenging, but you just try to kind of separate those out. And even doing that, even kind of with it all matched in there, you know, it still predicts very well, okay? But you try to do it so that those things aren't overlapping. You could be extremely tedious about it. You could cut every one of these pedicels off and do it independently. But I don't think I'm going to convince very many biologists to do that. They're just going to want to, all right, I'm going to press the thing. If I can get them to just spread it out and just explain the importance of spreading it and just laying it, scanning it or whatever, then I think, and so what we're trying to do is what a biologist would do. The average biologist is not going to be very meticulous about it. They don't have the time to do that. Get a better area estimate if you just cut off one of these, there's no doubt. I don't know. You can count it for me. Yeah.
Especially
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah, sure. Yeah. But I guess if over half of it's covered, you can eyeball it. Why not just count the one? You know? The first scan here, ABC Bioscientific, here, they flew to Knoxville for a little $5,000 meter to show me how to use this thing. Now, I did tell them, I was like, you know, if this works, man, I mean, the state agency here, they're going to buy four of them. I mean, this could go across the whole nation. So they flew on in to they literally have been emailing me. I get an email about once every 4 months asking about the results. And we just finished the study. And I initially planned to just do 1 year and get it done and over with. And then I got busy. And then Melissa came on. I was like, well, heck, you're gonna be, why don't we get 2 years worth of data? That'd be great, which is a better thing to do anyways. This thing, as you'll see, the surface area is really small. Always have head. And today, when you're scanning, I don't think we have rice cut grass. No, that's good. Yeah, that's right. Okay. So you'll be using contrast. And you do get a little, here's the seed head. You can see it there. Yeah, that's pretty much what you see. Sometimes y'all to do, I don't know if y'all have watches or cell phones, I want you to keep track of how long it takes when you're doing this stuff. Even if you have to scan multiple times, just keep the clock running. And same with the dot grid too. All right, then this is Javier. He's in our lab. Javier's going to take y'all down. Really, this is worth the investment. Melissa's opinion too. Really ought to work. I don't think we need to look at the videos. We all saw those. And, so then we dry and weighed everything. This is how you build a model, y'all. Now you scan everything. That's our independent variable. Okay, on this side. And then you dry and weigh everything. That's this side. So now we can relate these two variables. And ultimately, using statistics, you do a regression. And it fits a line to relating area scan or dots to the seed for that particular plant and for all your plants. So it comes up. On average, you get a slope parameter and intercept parameter. And so that's the model. And y'all saw these. So now y'all are going to need to use this slide for the problem. the problem that the lab exercises this afternoon are related to is problem number 5. It's the last problem. And you'll need to find, I'm not even sure what plant species that Melissa has for y'all. I think it's barnyard grass. But you'll have to find the equation here. You're going to get number of dots. Let's say it was barnyard grass. You're going to get number of dots. Okay, and you're just going to plug that in there and predict seed yield. You're going to get area, same thing for the portable and for the desktop. You're going to predict seed yield. That's going to be seed yield per plant. And then I'll give you the density. You would have to estimate density out in the field, and I'll give you just an average density to use. I get density per grams per square meter and kilograms per hectare, and boom, you can estimate Duck Energy Day. So we're going to go through that. Again, these are results you've already seen, but the bottom line is, but what we're going to do is Melissa's going to do the desk, or she's going to do the portable scanner. We're going to be located in here. I'm going to do the dot. So we're going to break you all up into three groups. And so a third of you will be with Melissa, a third will be with me, a third will go with Javier. And y'all will head on down and you'll count dots with me and scan and all that stuff. Probably, I'm guessing, dots will obviously take the longest, but scanning, at least the portable scanner, will take a while too, because you can only do that one student at a time. The desktop is one student at a time, but it's so darn fast. It's, I mean, like that, you know, it's done. Anyways, the folks that are doing the desktop will be back here pretty quick. And can do is start to work on the other problems. There are four other problems on that assignment, and start to read over it. And the first problem is using constants, and so it'll be you can start working on that. I'll be here to answer questions. So. Now you also could certainly study or do whatever you want to do when you're waiting for us to rotate. All right. The dot method, the longest was just took a long time to count all those dots. This is rice cut grass, which, these plants, so you can kind of get a feel for these. And let's see here, rice cut grass. There it Okay, so this plant here, red root flat sedge, that takes the longest, okay, when it comes to counting number of dots, as you can imagine. It's really kind of a really large seed head. And the fastest counting dots was rice cut grass. This one here. And you can see that's a pretty simple seed head. Doesn't take very long. And then for scanning, basically, longest for the portable was Walter's millet. And this is really kind of a small specimen of Walter's millet. The picture that I showed you all, Walter's millet can have really, really long awns. And what that does with that portable scanner, because it's shooting light down, creating a really, it doesn't do a really good scan, so you're having to scan it multiple times. So that really took quite a bit more time with the portable scanner. Desktop the longest also was red flat sedge. And then short for both the scanners, just regular barnyard grass. No, you should just scan it once. When you do the desktop, you just let it go through. We never scan it more than once. But sometimes when you do that portable, it doesn't at all. until you get visual image on the scanner. The desktop scanner doesn't give you a visual image. It just estimates it, and it's pretty darn accurate. But the portable one it just doesn't work as well. You'll get a feel for that. So yeah, sometimes you have to scan it more than once. And then as far as an average, no, I would just do, once you get a good image, you just stop. That's what your reading is. I mean, you could average it together, but I don't think you need to rescan it if you got the scan. Billy, do you have an announcement?
Yeah.
All right. There we go. Yeah.
How do you know what it is? I mean, have you compared the results for both maybe?
They are pretty close, and you kind of see that in these models. If you look at the models here, they're pretty darn close between the scanners. Let's just use barnyard grass. Okay, here's the slope, 0.023, 0.026, and then here's the intercept. See how close those are? So these models are very similar. I mean, 0.09, 0.10, 0.07, 0.08. Fall Panicum was our problem child. The portable was really a lot different, and actually it didn't predict very well. It's 0.87. That was the poorest model that we had, and it was quite a bit different. Fall Panicum, the thing is it's. I don't know. I think just the scan didn't predict as well. And again, Fall Panicum, it has really open inflorescence. It's really open. And there's a lot of plant parts to it. There's the pedicels, lots of stems, and the seed is way out towards the end. It's not really clustered. And so I think what is happening here with these is you're scanning a bunch of other stuff. And correspondingly, it's not as strongly correlated with the seed yield. So that's probably why the dot grid, again, you can see the stem. So you don't count the stem, you just count the seed. You can see that, and you can differentiate between that with the dot grid. But scanners, it doesn't. I mean, it's scanning everything. So one thing about putting a seed head in, you want to make sure that, you know, before you scan it, like in this case, that you cut that plant, that seed head right below. You're really scanning most of what you're scanning is the seed head. Certainly there are other plant parts in there, but you certainly don't want to put in big. Alright, so okay. Alright. I guess that's about it. Yeah, the time, as we talked about, I mean, you know, could range all the way up to 13 minutes counting the seed head and dots. 15 seconds on average for. Okay, so these models predicted well. All the models did. Again, I mean, that gives me a little bit of confidence too. It really doesn't surprise me too much, considering that the resolution of these dots is the same as the resolution of the scanners. And again, seed head area is a really good predictor. It is strongly correlated with seed. Dot grid took 22 times longer than the desktop scanner. Full scanner took 3 times longer on average, 15 seconds on average for the desktop. So, what I'm recommending to state agencies or refuges is buy a desktop scanner. A refuge probably can buy a desktop scanner or a refuge complex. They're about, I think we have about 6 national wildlife refuges in West Tennessee that they could put their money together and buy one scanner and go on over and use it. And same with the WMAs. You know, we have over 100 WMAs in Tennessee. We could buy one per region, and WMAs could go to the regional office. The biologists there could go to the regional office to use it. The next step is to make this attractive and to market it, because you know, it seems logical and stuff, but sometimes it's just hard to get folks to change and incorporate new ideas and new technology if it's getting us better information. So that's really my task at hand, is to try to really market it, and I'm going to attempt to do that through some workshops with TWRA, Fish and Wildlife Service. Hopefully get them excited about it and emphasize the importance of it. That's the loud eye talking. I'm sure that they'll be excited about it, yeah. Oh, yeah, so duckling, yeah. Everybody's using it. And duckling is And I think still, natural production is a little more, certainly more constant than a natural area as far as production. So on average, using the estimates that that we're generating now, they're probably decent. But for the natural wetlands, you certainly need to go out there and be getting these estimates. So I went through this whole process last week, and I think this is important. I'd like for you to know this process and what you would do to use these models. And so if you had a wetland like this, a moist soil unit, you know, what would you do? You could do lots of different things. The easiest thing is just to set up a transect and, you know, say, okay, well, I know the distance across my impoundment here is, I don't know, whatever, 200 meters, and I'm going to put 10 plots out there, so every plot is going to be separated by 20 meters. And just to do it systematically and just go across that wetland on an azimuth bearing. And once you get to that 20 meters, boom, you stop, and you drop down a frame. Now I recommend, you know, you can get hoops, 1 meter square hoops, they're plastic, a hula hoop will work, you know, whatever. I mean, just plop it down as long as you know what the area is, whatever is easy. And then what you're going to do is within that area, to see seed producing plants. All right, what do I have there that's producing seed? And you're going to count the number of plants that you have. Okay, so you keep track, okay, I have 10 barnyard grass plants and 5 whatever swamp smartweed plants, etc. Keep track of that, and then you're going to randomly select one of those. And how you do your random selection can be however you want to do it. You shouldn't just grab the largest seed head. But as you're counting those, you can keep track of, okay, as you get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you can actually number those. And you could pull a number out of a hat. You could just do it more systematically, like, okay, I'm always going to pull a plant out of down the quadrant, so the southeast-west edges. And so you could say, let's say, this is the northeast quadrant. Those quadrants. Had more one within a quadrant, obviously, you could. the way the terminology has been used in the past, all the way back to Laubon and Fredrickson, is that you basically collect a representative plant. And quite frankly, most biologists, that's about all you're gonna have to just say. You want to collect a representative plant. If you start to make things, even though that sounds relatively simple and systematic, it's already a chore to get most biologists out in the field. And then to actually make them have to flip a coin or use a random number, what in the hell, you know? Just can't I just clip a seed head? The important thing is, I think, in stressing, is that you don't want it representative because you do not want to overestimate. You don't want to underestimate. So, now what you could do, I mean, if for biologists that wanted to, they could collect all the darn seed heads from that plot and scan them all and take an average. But just to keep things manageable, I would suggest, you know, just one rep per species. Okay, so you do that, collect the seed head, you bag it up, and then you bring it back and you scan that seed head. And then you get it, you average those if you had, you know, across the plots here. So for, you had one barnyard plant, right? Barnyard grass plant here. So you have a total of 10 maybe, or maybe you just have 5, whatever it is. You average that across those plots and you get an average scan period. For example, you'll have some number when you scan today. Find the correct formula in that table, plug it in there, and boom, you're going to predict seed yield. Okay? So then you're going to use the density estimates. Again, you have density, average density, and that could be 0, 0, 0, 5, 10, 12, whatever. I mean, you're going to average across there to get average density. So on average, you know, we have 10 plants out there. Barnyard grass. Multiply those together. Okay. So what I'll do for your assignment is I'll say, all right, you have 15 plants. Obviously, I'm just going to give you the average for you to do this multiplication. And then you add up across the species. If you have more than one species, you just have one, then that's it. Which is the math is just multiply by 10. That's like 110 kilograms per hectare. And again, y'all should be able, I should be able to give you a kilograms per hectare estimate like this and say, do y'all think this is in early, mid, or late succession? So what do y'all think? Yeah, this is late succession. If I gave you around 500 kilograms per hectare, would be early. Okay, so then from there you have kilograms per hectare, and then you know, if you had a 10 hectare wetland or 100 hectare wetland, then whatever it is, then you multiply that to get your total kilograms. Then you can calculate your DEDs. So your total kilograms, that incorrectly. I should have subtracted off. Okay. 50 kilograms per hectare. 50 kilograms per hectare. So that would be 60 kilograms per hectare times 10 hectares is 600 kilograms of seed. And I mention that because that's the wrong number. From your kilograms per hectare. So that should be 600. So this number is going to be incorrect, but You multiply it by the average energy. Again, I'm just using 2.5 kilocalories per gram, which is 2,500 kilocalories per kilogram, divided by 292, boom. So now, this number here, a lot of biologists, ask, well, what the hell does that mean? Now, what does, 10,000 duck energy days mean? I just don't get it. Well, if you divide by your time that seed is available or that food is available, then it becomes something that's interpretable. So if you flood for 110 days, that means you can sustain, in this particular wetland, given this amount of seed, 83 ducks per day for 110 days. Now it becomes something that's biologically realistic. It's an estimate of foraging carrying capacity. This is how many can be sustained over a certain amount of time. Okay, now, any questions? Yeah, this is, you remember, for moist soil seed, it's 2.5 kilocalories on average, 2.47 kilocalories per gram. Per gram, so if you multiply that by 1,000 grams, a kilogram, that's 2,500 kilograms. Well, there's more energy for inverts, but generally the production of inverts is a lot less, so their contribution to GDP is much less. Yes. Well, that's the average across all different moist soil seeds. Now, what I think I'll do here, since we have a little bit of time before lunch, is, I think I'm about done, is that I'll give you your assignment and we'll go through it and I'll talk about the handouts and explain everything now so you understand the assignment. And then you can start to work on it this afternoon if you want while I'm around and where you're waiting to go between stations or something. So, let's see if I have that's really nothing. These were some estimates I did when I was in Puerto Rico, and it can be helpful, basically, for comparing the differences in productivity between different wetlands and stuff. A summary of the problems, we've already talked about these, so that's just the last slide. We still need to test the scanning method across different regions. So we really need to look to see, is there any regional bias? I don't think there's going to be, because the DOT method didn't have that, and they're doing functionally the same thing. Okay, so now it's your turn, Duck Energy. The last day of wetlands, which is the day we're driving back from Mississippi. Now, what I recommend is that over the holiday, spring break, while you're working on your take-home question that you got yesterday, I start working on your Duck Energy Day assignment. And on Monday that we come back, I'm going to lecture in the morning and probably just lecture on one topic. Again, maybe two, depending on what you guys want to do. But try to keep that a short day. The next day, obviously, is when we're leaving for Mississippi, and you have your written exam. But I'll provide time that day to basically answer questions on the Duck Energy Day assignment. So I would encourage you to basically be done with DED stuff before we go to Mississippi, because we're going to be involved with stuff all day when we come back. There's nothing more than a bummer having to do a math assignment. Everybody else is having a cold beer and eating some crawfish. So, and there's always somebody every year that's in there working on their computer trying to get their Duck Energy Day assignment together. And I don't know, it doesn't sound very fun to me, but. What's that? So, Yeah, let's, why don't you come on up here, let me, has everybody filled out this little question survey for what topic you would like to hear that Monday we come back? If not, please do. And let me go ahead and turn off the podcast here, and I'll hand out the assignment.